This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All this time, Porter, everything you've done, everything you've said, I've heard all about. So you've made some remarks in the past about when is Papa Fritz going to be here. Papa Fritz is here.
Cast episode number 8, where we're looking at WCCW number 15, January, February, March, April 3rd, 1982 on the network. And this actually, guys, is kind of an interesting episode because I think it's the very last episode that's on the network where they haven't gone national yet. I believe they go national either it's the next episode, which they don't have on the network, or the one that we're going to cover next time where they actually go national. So this is actually their very last one where they haven't gone national.
I think they'd gone national right from the beginning, but this was the last of the pre-Mickey Grant TV shows, because he comes in and brings in his production team. And as we'll see,
okay,
it's noticeably different.
The understanding
different.
I always got was Mickey Grant was the one where they went national, or they, like, played it up as national.
Oh, well, maybe that too. I thought they were national from the get-go, but definitely this is the end of an era here. We're seeing the end of the gestation period, or whatever you want to call it, for world-class wrestling.
Yeah, it's actually weird, because I think I might be a few episodes ahead of you guys, and you can actually see the crowd getting larger.
Yeah.
And, like, the crowd getting a lot hotter.
Mm-hmm.
And younger. And it might be because of the production, that where Mickey Grant's able to pick up a lot of the audio is better, maybe. I don't know. But maybe some of the acts might be getting clicked, or getting, you know, clicking, like King Kong Bundy. And I believe, like, they're bringing some of the guys who were stars from yesteryear in the promotion. Like, I think we're going to get the Spoiler coming back in a week or two. And stuff. So I think that means something for business wise for the company.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, let's get into it. And this is also the last time we get a pairing of a combination of people. And this is with, we have Mark Lorenz and Frank Dusick. Now, King Johnny, what would you think of these guys as announcers throughout the show?
I feel so bad for Frank Dusick, because he finally gets his chance. And as we'll talk about throughout it, with a few blips here and there, he pretty much nails it.
Yeah,
he
right?
fucking nails it. And he's like, I got this gig. What? We're doing what? fuck. And then, you know, I'm getting out of this promotion.
Yeah.
But, I'm sorry, but he's all dapper. He looks great. He and Lorenz develop a chemistry. Mm-hmm. Throughout this, which is amazing, with Mark Lorenz, the human Valium. And and so I really, really like that. And one quick thing about this before we move on. When he was introducing himself, he started talking about some personal issue, and he started going into promo mode, and he caught himself.
Yeah.
And with a blip from Mark, you know, like a syllable, he catches himself and goes, boom, no, that's not what I'm doing here. And I thought, that's fucking remarkable.
Yeah, so, right at the opening of the show, right?
Yeah.
Right at the opening of the show.
I wasn't sure if that was a cut or if he...
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, because it seemed very awkward. But yeah.
Because he almost goes back to the same story, but in a different form in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. It was weird.
So what about you, Kelly? What were your thoughts on Dusick? Because it felt like he added a lot to the show.
Yeah. I mean, the people we've seen in the color chair previously didn't set the bar high, as we've discussed, But no, Dusik was comfortable in the role. He was getting over angles, getting over wrestlers, doing what he was supposed to do, adding color. You know, who'd have thunk that's what you're supposed to do here? But it's unfortunate. Yeah, it's probably maybe one and done for him. Too bad.
Well, sort of, because like I remember it was just funny. It was like years later when he's actually the commissioner or like the figurehead guy. He does a lot of color commentary, and he's actually very good, you know, like years later and stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, when, during the Eric Embry era and stuff. Yeah, so pretty cool. Yeah, but I'm with you. I was like, when I was watching it, I was like really taken aback by, I thought it was like a weird opening, like promo intro, and I had question marks all about it. But maybe you got it. You covered it, Johnny. Then we open up with Black Gordman versus Al Madrill. And these guys actually have a history. In Houston, Gordman was a big opponent of Jose Lothario, and Al Madrill was one of Jose's regular tag partners. So these guys actually have a history of actually working with each other a lot. Did that show in the match there, Kelly?
Oh, yeah, I think it. I totally did. They probably worked together in Los Angeles a lot, too, because Madrill was there in the 70s, and Gordman... Black Gordman, he's Blackie Gordman here, but he's more well known as Black Gordman, was one of the top heels in LA in the 70s. Famous tag team with Grand Goliath, where they would state before the match, "We're not from Mexico, we're from New Mexico," which angered all the Mexican fans in the crowd in Los Angeles. It got great heat. Yeah, this was a surprise to see him pop up here. He was 46 years old at the time and debuted in 1953, so almost 30 years in the business at this point. Unbelievable. And he has a pretty damn fine head of hair as well.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yep. It's up there on the Tony Gurria scale.
Yeah. I was thinking like Frankie close. Avalon almost.
Yeah. A really old, worn out, rugged Frankie Avalon.
That's a good comparison, actually.
How about Tony Curtis then? How about that? Well, that
no, I like the Frankie.
Your reference, John.
I like the Frankie Avalon one.
Yeah,
life's been hell since Annette died.
Yeah, and how about Al Madrill's ring jacket? That was incredible. The green.
Yes, even if you're watching in black and white.
Yeah, you could tell it was green. It was so powerfully green, even in black and white, you could tell it was green. It was awesome. I hope somebody has that in their collection somewhere. It deserves to be preserved. Madrill is basically, you know, I've come to realize, like, the physical personification of the 70s. He's just top to bottom. If you had a Wikipedia page for the 1970s, Al Madrill's picture would be, you know, a pretty good one to pick to symbolize the whole decade. But I kind of like Madrill. He's a solid guy. The fans like him a lot. He's very popular. He's kind of like the king of the two-star match. And I thought this was like a two-star affair right here. Just a solid bout. Good back and forth. It was pretty long, this match, actually.
It went to a draw.
One glimpse into the 1980s we did get in this match was Gordman busting out a DDT, and Dusik remarked that he'd never seen that move before, which was probably true, because it was kind of...
Well, it predated, because this is 82, it predated Jake's DDT, and we discovered on the Houston footage that Gordman was the guy who invented the DDT.
Oh, yeah, good.
And then we also saw something recently where... Like, was that a DDT? You know, and they just like, oh, interesting front fall,
yeah,
and stuff. But yeah.
Yeah,
we saw him in, like, I think it was 1980 or 1981 doing it
right.
On Houston footage and stuff. So yeah, it's pretty neat when you see stuff like that where, you know, the folklore was, we've always, I mean, Johnny, you tell us the Jake the Snake story.
Oh, he invented the DDT. I didn't know I'd be quizzed, but that Jake accidentally invented the DDT in a match with, I think, the Masked Superstar.
I was going to say Ronnie Garvin, but I'm not sure.
See, there you go with the legend. I always heard it was a mass fucking superstar. Anyway, they went to do something. Someone slipped, and they just fell, and the fans went crazy, you know, and that's how I invented it. Yeah, whatever.
and the funny thing is I heard it at the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame from the Grappler that it was him.
DDP, of course, everybody invented the DDP. But yeah, no, this was a decent little match. Gordman was trapped in the abdominal stretch as time ran out, and yeah, 2 stars for me.
Hey, what about you, Johnny? What do you make of it?
Well, as Kelly just ended with, and Dusik pointed that out, exactly what I was thinking. There's the countdown. You're just down to these seconds, and he goes for a fucking abdominal stretch. It's like, it's not your established finishing move or anything like that. It's fucking no. And he keeps going, you know, if he just rolled backwards and rolled him up, he probably could get a 1-2-3. Ah, no, he didn't. No, he's not that bright. It's really good. But Dusik also totally puts over both guys. And also, as we'll see throughout this, totally puts over in his own well-intentioned way a respect for Mexican and Central American and South American. He just keeps listing areas down there. But they're wrestling. Watch this. You know, he's totally putting them over. And the legend of Black Gordman and all that. He's really good. I'm sorry, Pete.
No, I'm saying, yeah, you know, and that probably a lot of that comes from back from being part of like a wrestling family. Mm-hmm. Really, you know, you probably being in that wrestling family, you learn probably a lot more different styles, or you appreciate different styles by being exposed by your family being in so many different territories.
Yeah, and then we get when I heard this, I just wrote down, and we'll get to it because you'll know what I'm talking about. But even though he's a heel commentator, you know, he knows where his bread is buttered about putting over this, you know, carries the real world champion because of what happened, you know, and he really gets into it later on, man. But for the match, there was a great little slugfest right around the middle of it that I thought looked fucking badass. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, like, you see a fan run into like a Jimmy Hart looking type David Manning-ish fan, like maybe it was Manning, like runs into the frame and starts like pumping up the crowd, you know, like go, let's go, ow, and then beats it when they do. And I'm going, that guy must either be a plant or the world's biggest Al Madrill fan. But and another cool thing that Frank did is Al does a punch in some hole that does look like he punched the guy in the fucking nuts. And Mark calls it low. He was like, oh, or like he basically is like, oh, that, look at that. That's, you know, oh, and just insinuating that. And Frank quickly, realizing that Al is the baby face, he goes, well, actually, you know, he punched him right in that upper thigh. You know, he's really desperate. And I'm like, damn, that's some quick thinking about about knowing wrestling.
And being an announcer. Staying in character, you know?
Yeah. And, but having to correct, but no, we don't want to say that, you know, let's, you know, he's the good guy. We don't insinuate the good guy did that, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, so it was very entertaining. And the match was a lot of fun. But
yeah, I thought it was pretty good, too. You know, again, like you were hitting on, Kelly, that Gordman and Goliath team is just a really famous tag team. Drew a ton of money. I enjoyed the early part of the match. I thought it was really interesting and engaging. And I thought Dusik was fantastic in giving us background on both guys.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite parts was actually how Gordman was shielding the ref when he was cheating. It was really, really interesting. And so then we get the draw, which was pretty rather interesting. That was a pretty good match. And so, Johnny, next up we have this Bugsy McGraw interview. What were your thoughts on this thing?
This was awesome. This was amazing. He's now the Brass Knuckles champion, so he's still crazy, but he's being a tough guy, you know, and it's not complete babble, you know. And he does start with, "I've merged nothing," and then just starts going on about being the baddest motherfucker on the block. And I'm like, this rules. And he eventually gets to this story about when he was a little kid, he asked his dad for a, he said, and he starts screaming, "I want a pony. I want a pony." And he told me I couldn't have a pony. Yes, you know what I did? I broke his arm because that's what I do to people. Whatever. And I'm fucking marking out like a motherfucker. I'm like, and look at this. Last week, we find an actually great Bugsy McGraw match. This week, an actually great Bugsy promo. This has been lovely.
Yeah, count me in. I thought the promo was excellent, and it really enhanced McGraw's, gave him a little bit of an edge. Being the Brass Knucks champ, and his promo backed up that edge. What were your thoughts here, Kelly?
Yeah, I continue to be won over by Bugsy after my initial impression that I didn't really like him, but yeah, he can talk. He had noticeable blade scars on his forehead, so I'm assuming that the match where he won the Brass Knucks title from Lothario was pretty awesome. Too bad it wasn't taped. It looked like it was probably a bloodbath. Yeah. Bring on more Bugsy. Let's see what he can do now that he's the Brass Knucks champ.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw that on Twitter, how Jose's son about that McGraw match. Mm-hmm. He was going to ask his dad if he remembered anything about it and stuff.
Yeah, I saw that. That was awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Then we got Tom Boogaloo Shaft
versus the
great Kabuki. Ellie, man, this is all your baby.
Oh, thank you. I just,
and what an ugly baby it could be.
Yeah, pretty ugly. Yeah, Tom Shaft is the shits.
He stinks. He's the fucking worst.
If Parv was on this show, he would definitely like latch onto Shaft as like his strongbow for this for this show for sure.
I wouldn't want that to happen.
But yeah, my initial notes have nothing to do with the match. Dusik acknowledged the varying percentage of sight loss. I thought that was funny. 20? Or is it 25%?
Nobody knows.
Nobody knows. Somewhere in that spectrum.
You know, it's so bad when it's such a hard-hitting angle and the damn company can't even keep it straight, you know?
And while we're talking about it, by the end of eventually get to, they go, "Well, it was 20, but it's fine now." Yeah. And drop it. And they drop it.
Yeah,
yeah, it's like the company never believed in buying a post-it note or something. I mean, shit.
Well, and Fritz didn't really sell it either. I guess he was wearing sunglasses sometimes, but otherwise it wasn't like he was walking around like he needed help or something with his sight.
Yeah, you know, you're right. Yeah, there's no cane.
Of course not.
So it was kind of all pointless. We see that animated old lady again. Uh-huh. This time she's wearing blue, not red. She gets pretty close to the ring, and there's a police officer standing close by. So I think they've been alerted that she may be someone who may jump into the ring if they're not too sure.
She's on the sportatorium watch list.
Because her seat is actually it's like several rows back, and then she always runs up to the front and then goes back to the middle section.
You know what you got to do to be on a list in that crowd of motherfuckers?
I know.
She's probably been causing trouble since the 60s.
Oh, I love her.
50s. Yeah, I mean, I love Kabuki, so he's good in this. He sells well for Shaft. The story of the match was actually all right, where Kabuki hurt his hand, of course, on Shaft's hard head. And then the rest of the match was Shaft targeting the hand with headbutts. And then we get interference with the managers, because now Hussein is part of the whole group with Gary Hart, H&H. And nunchucks were brought in by Kabuki. The ref doesn't see it. You know, this just adds more heat to Kabuki. He's basically the focal point for the heels. And yeah, he's super over as a heel. Shaft is just there to put him over, and that as well he should. And it's nothing more than just putting more heat on Kabuki, that's all.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I actually like the story of the match, of the working over the hand part.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've been, you know, the trope in wrestling is, I think, what is it? Is it Samoan is greater than the black man's head or whatever? And then
it pisses me off so bad here. No, here, it pisses me off. Okay? Let me just say why. Here's why. When it's the junkyard dog in Mid-South or something, and he's doing that, and the way he projects himself, and then I'm willing to look past that, those kinds of stereotype things. It's cool, you know. But when I see fucking Tom fucking Shaft, who stinks, and he's depending on that kind of fucking behavior, you know, it just leaves a bad taste in my mouth.
I can see that.
Tom Shaft. Yeah, you know what I mean? It's just like, it's your crutch in front of
you. But I'd rather see them work a match with a crutch and keep it simple than really try to, you know, sit in a, be real spontaneous and sit in a in a headlock goal match.
Well, no, but yeah. the whole thing is that the only way he ever even had a chance against Kabuki is Kabuki's got a broken hand. You could do a lot of different ways to stomp on that fucking hand without having to go to that.
I totally agree with you there. I mean, they definitely could have worked the story a little differently. Yes. But I'm glad they kept it simple. Let me rephrase that.
Oh, I get it. I just.
And I enjoyed the finish with the nunchucks. I love
the nunchucks, yeah. Brother.
Any other thoughts, Johnny, on the match?
We pretty much hit everything. Just real quick, Hussein. I'm going to announce something positive. Hussein looks cool as fuck in his suit and his fez type thing. Looks fucking cool, dude. He looks big time. David Mannon or whatever, it's telling him that one of the managers has to leave, him or Hart, and he gets on the mic and he does this whole tirade that's basically, if I'm kicked out of ringside, my father, the king of Zimbabwe or whatever, will end diplomatic relations with the United States and shit. And I'm loving that. I'm like, that was fantastic. And then I just marked out for the nunchucks like you, Pete, and not just because it was cool, because I couldn't wait to see Tom fucking Shaft get the shit kicked out of him. Fucking nunchucks. Tom Shaft stinks. Ugh.
Wow, Parv.
Yeah. Who would have thought that?
That's how you really feel.
This is Mr. Positive.
I know, man.
He must be really horrible then. Wow.
Awful.
You know? Well, now here's a question, Kelly. You might know: was Gary Hart at this point doing double duty here and in Georgia?
I think they had separate runs, but I'm not entirely sure. I know Kabuki and him definitely worked Georgia, but I think it was earlier. I think it was '81.
Because I felt they kind of did the H&H thing to give Hart. Like, so he wouldn't be, if he's, because he was, I thought he was doing double duty somewhere.
Yeah.
So he wouldn't, where Hussein could still carry some of Hart's heat.
Yeah.
While he wasn't there full time.
He may wear it very well then, because a lot of people were working Georgia, like, part time then because of the TBS deal, and everybody wanted to get in on that, and they had a lot of part time guys. So, yeah, it may have been that kind of situation.
Yeah, I always find it interesting because I would never – I mean, you guys might disagree with me, but I would not think Hussein never screams as me as a top-tier manager type of thing that should be associated with Gary Hart. But and then Gary Hart's the booker here.
Yeah.
So
that would make a lot of sense. Yeah, that would make total sense, because why else would they need to partner up, really? I don't understand
that.
Right.
I mean, or maybe – I mean, I know Hart did it with Humperdinck back in Florida. Maybe it was just something he
– Yeah, maybe.
Be treaded because it's something he felt worked in Florida, but Hussein and Humperdinck are two different animals. I've never been a Humperdinck guy, but Humperdinck back in when he was a lot younger was still smoked.
Yeah.
Amar Hussein 8 days Friday.
So based on this, I'm digging. I'm not the wrestler.
Or the commentator.
But this, I'm like, he looks good. Yeah. I think he's perfectly okay. And he gets heat with that crowd. So
it's almost like you feel like Prince Nana from Ring of Honor stole his whole entire act.
You know what? That's a really good point. I saw a lot of Prince Nana back in when I was going to the indie shows and stuff. I saw a lot of Nana and I always enjoyed him. So yeah, that's fantastic. I'm sure that's true.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, and NWA Classics On Demand Adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, man. Now we got a Kerry Von Erich versus Carlos Zabata match. Oof. Kelly, what about this bad boy?
Not much. It was pretty short. It's all about Kerry making Kerry look great. This is where Dusik goes into super hypercell mode on Kerry's athletic prowess as the number 8 ranked discus thrower in the world at one point. And he would have made the 1980 Olympics if there was a boycott, don't you know? I've heard that before. I mean, I don't know how true. I know Kerry was actually legit, like a really good discus thrower. I don't know, how accomplished he actually was. But anyway, and it all sets up perfectly, Kerry winning with his super discus punch. So.
Okay. But, take that, Jimmy Carter.
But, nothing much to this match at all.
Yeah, I mean, nothing but to the match, but yeah, but Dusik clearly know where his paycheck was coming from here. I mean, this was fucking... it was great on how grand he put him over. And but my God, he should have immediately had to take mouthwash after that.
Well, he didn't tell you.
All the blowjob he just fucking did.
God damn it, you stole my blowjob joke. I mean, God damn it.
You shine that one up real good for Kerry.
Oh, dude.
What'd you make of this one, Johnny?
He was just big, sloppy blowjob. Fucking Kerry Von Erich, and it made me sick. Not that I'm homophobic, but he's a fucking heel. And really? He's the fucking heel. You can do that without having to do what we just fucking saw. It's fucking nuts. But this whole thing starts. They're doing the, you know, baby faces signing the autographs thing. And it's all these like little 12-year-old boys. So Kerry don't give a fuck. And he's just grabbing shit out of kids' hands, not looking, just scribbles of shit and throwing them back into the mob of angry children who are fighting to get one after he just tosses them in their face. It's nuts. But yeah, some of the Dusik, what he says, he even says, he's like, Kerry Von Erich got a raw deal. I'm like, fuck you. Go fuck yourself. You're the bad guy. You know, and it's not his fault. He knows what he's supposed to do.
Johnny, in a weird way, doesn't it kind of work because the heel is putting it over so much?
No.
Because this is a line they pushed for years as the uncrowned champion.
No.
And when you hear the heel saying it, I mean, to the audience members, they must be like, man, this must be true if the heels are even agreeing that.
No. I can see the logic there, but I think that's a stretch. I'm just saying because, and it's not Frank Dusik's fault at all. This is what he's supposed to do, and yeah, he does it wonderfully.
He's almost like he's booked in a match with Fritz, and he's taking giant bumps.
He's delivering a love letter to Kerry Von Erich as the most eloquent announcer we've seen. That is just eloquent and big and boom. And I'm sure Fritz is probably like, I think he's landing on a bit thick.
Well, I was gonna say if I didn't know any better, Fritz was feeding him lines through a headset. Like,
I don't.
10 years before Vince McMahon innovated.
He was an innovator. Kelly, he was an innovator.
Yeah, this was an innovative show. So yeah, you never know.
Oh boy.
Which leads us to Kerry's like promo where he challenges Flair for the belt. Johnny, any amazing takes here?
Right after all that, before we get to that, you hear Lorenz say in his Lorenz monotone voice, he goes, if Kerry isn't the uncrowned champ, who is? And he's like, oh, boy, this is like, feels like being indoctrinated into a cult. And it worked, so there you go. But yeah, I didn't even write anything down about Kerry's promo. I guess it was that forgettable to me.
Yeah, it was real quick. Any thoughts from you, Kelly?
Yeah, I actually fast forwarded at this point because I thought they were going to replay the thing with Flair from a few weeks back at this point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just they did it. Though they kind of did that and then they had probably just a quick outtake from Kerry.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I fast forwarded through the whole thing.
That leads us to the main event of the returning spoiler versus Wild Bill Irwin. And man, they kind of cheat us and they make this joint in progress about 5 minutes in. So we got maybe a 4 minute main event. What did you think, Kelly?
Yeah, I mean, this is, I think, the first joint in progress match we've had. And it's too bad because it looked like this was maybe hot because when we cut into the action, they're swinging chairs at each other on the outside. Cool. And the spoiler, I always like seeing footage of him because it's not exactly plentiful out there. Was he a baby face? I couldn't figure out who was supposed
to be. He's a baby face right now.
Okay, yeah.
Coming to world class, yes.
Okay, yeah. But then Irwin had split off from Dusik. That was Dusik mentioned that briefly at the beginning, but then never really brought it up again. So I wasn't sure what the deal was with those two.
Yeah, if you watch in a few weeks, it's clearly spoilers working against feuding with other heels.
Yeah, because he'd been around for a while now, so it's time for him to do a babyface run. I always like.
Yeah, and I think the main reason why they bring him back, and I mean, he was obviously a big opponent of Fritz's.
Yeah.
And I think they bring him back first of a feud with Bundy. Mm. And I think the goal was for Spoiler to give him the rub.
Nice.
For Bundy to get ready for Fritz and then the boys and stuff.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because, Spoiler was a legend in Dallas.
Yeah.
And his career was definitely winding down at this point. But what we saw was good back and forth action. And then it was another time limit draw. Not the most spectacular 45 minutes of TV this week, but well. It's getting better.
But it helped having a great color guy this week, you know?
Yeah, that was the big plus. He was the MVP.
I mean, it wasn't cringy. Like, God, no, you got to be kidding me.
No.
Or you're laughing the whole entire time. I mean, if you're wrestling, you're not supposed to be laughing for the whole 45 minutes because the commentating's that bad. What were your thoughts here, Johnny?
I was about to say, after listening to ET describe it, I'm thinking, how many podcasts you ever been on where you felt like Frank and everyone else was this show that we watched? Oh, come on. Sometimes I'm the bad. A lot of times I'm the really bad one. I wish there was more of this. I thought Spoiler looked fucking great.
Mm-hmm.
And Lorenz, when they're swinging the chairs at each other, Lorenz goes, "It's like fencing with chairs." I'm like, no. And then he calls it I don't know what deal the Spoiler has. Because they got to call it the Iron Claw. And apparently, remember, that's trademarked.
Yeah.
You know, but no one else could call it the Iron Claw because the Von Erichs have trademarked that. We remember that from a previous show. So maybe as a baby, to your point about him to get Bundy ready, Fritz is like, yeah, go ahead, call it the Iron Claw because it'll get more heat or whatever.
Yeah, well, when he originally came into when he feuded with Fritz, is when the rules was he could call it the Claw, but he had to wear a glove. So that made his claw dangerous, but in a heelish way.
He's a cheater. Okay, I get it. Yeah, but hey, kids, another draw on one show.
You start it with a draw, we end it with a draw. That's how we do it in Texas. But now, Kelly, about the Spoiler, me and Johnny got to see quite a bit of him in the Houston footage, and we got to see him in some of it in his prime in the 70s and stuff. And you could, I mean, I always saw a lot of Undertaker in him, and then which is, you know, Spoiler was like his teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see a little Undertaker here yet?
Oh, definitely, because the way he uses the ropes, and as a big guy using the ropes, that was, you know, especially when Undertaker was younger, he did that a lot. And it was unusual at the time for someone like the Spoiler to do that. Yeah, Undertaker totally took a lot from him. He's a guy that, you know, doesn't really get talked about much, unfortunately. He was from an era where, footage wasn't readily available. He didn't work the WWF, so he never had a run there where we could watch footage of him. So, yeah, it's unfortunate that he's not as more well-known as he is.
Yeah, because, I mean, his big runs were Texas, Australia, Canada, right?
Well, he's Canadian. I guess he probably worked Canada. He worked the AWA as the Super Destroyer. He also was the Super Destroyer, I think, in the Carolinas and not the Spoiler.
Yeah, and I know in Georgia he had a run there.
Yeah, but Texas was kind of his big place. That was where he was with Gary Hart and for years and years and years.
Yeah, they're like, I mean, really good friends. I mean, like, really good friends.
Yeah, he did actually have a run in New York, but that was like 1972. When Pedro was champ, and he had to actually go without a mask because at the time, the masked wrestlers weren't allowed to wrestle in the territory, or at least in Madison Square Garden. So, yeah, you know, I remember
one of the cool things we saw in the Houston footage was a masked Mexican wrestler, Al Halcon, when he had to wrestle for the world title, he actually had to take his mask off to wrestle.
Yeah, because the masked wrestlers couldn't challenge for the title. Yeah, I always thought that was kind of neat that you would sacrifice, you know, your gimmick or whatever, your persona to get a chance at the title. That, I always thought that was kind of neat.
That's just the man putting the brother man down.
No masks allowed.
Uh-huh. I always found the spoiler a real interesting character, and he's a guy I've really come to like from what I've seen, and I think here is like this will be one of his last big runs. Yeah. I know he goes to WWF, I think in 83 maybe.
Later when
84?
After they buy Georgia, after Vince buys Georgia,
yeah, okay.
Spoiler comes right, in, and he's the national champion, actually, the Georgia national champion.
Yeah, and then he's used in like undercard feuds on the WWF. I remember in Brett's book, he mentions about working the spoiler and stuff.
Yeah, Brett had to job to the spoiler early in his run there as a babyface. And yes, by 85, he was done, pretty much, I think.
Yeah, that's interesting, cool. You know, another early WCCW show. They're still feels like they're, you know, they have this small ass roster.
Mm-hmm.
The stars haven't really started clicking yet.
No.
We can definitely see where they're definitely pushing Carrie. He's definitely the golden child early in this.
Mm-hmm.
David, it's like he's like the brother they don't like to talk about. Around.
Yeah, that's a good teaser for the next week's episode, because we should talk about that when we get there.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Kelly, do you have anything you want to mention before we head out?
Sure. The latest edition of Mount Olympus, Fall 2017, just dropped a few days ago. And I was joined by Richard Land, the famous Richard Land from the UK. Big footage collector. I think PT probably rivals maybe your collection. Well, no, nobody rivals your collection.
Is. I mean, those are guys who, there's a couple of them real sickos out there.
Yeah. Well, okay. Richard's just a little bit sick, but, he was great on the show. We talked about the WWE unreleased DVD and, had a great time going through all those. Well, not all the matches, but a good chunk of them. And we have another part coming out probably a few days, Monday or so, hopefully Monday. Yeah.
Cool. What about you, amigo Johnny?
Nothing. So I just got this one last thing about to go on a happier note about this episode. As they're signing off, and we're signing off to this era of World Class TV, Frank Dusek, puts over Mark Lorenz, like as they're wrapping it up. It's been a pleasure, you know, all that. He goes, it's been a pleasure to work here with the foremost wrestling commentator, you know, in the world today, Mr. Lorenz. And love to come back. And Mark Lorenz, with a grin on Mark Lorenz's face, says, "We'd be glad to have you." He's like, "Finally. Finally, I'm doing this with someone who can do this."
Yeah.
But no.
No. It's all over. Solo time for Mark.
Yep, it is. It's time to sink or swim.
Yep, until they bring in Bill Mercer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you can follow me at Titans O Wrestling. And just a friendly reminder, man, this Friday, October 13th and October 14th is CWF FanCon. I'll be down there in Gibsonville for the CWF FanCon and CWF Rumble on Saturday. We're going to have a bunch of Q&As. I'll be doing recording the podcast there. If you're in the neighborhood, come on down, check it out. We're going to have a nice buffet there on Friday. And then Saturday, some more Q&As. Go to John Philip Habage's Twitter handle on Twitter. And go to JB025 on Twitter, and they have the whole entire lineup on what we're doing. We're going to have a heel Q&A, a babyface Q&A, administrative Q&A. It's going to be a lot of fun, man. And the cool thing is, man, you get to go around and hang out with a bunch of wrestling fans, drink some beers, have a good time. And that's, again, October 13th and 14th, this upcoming weekend.
Hey, Pete, real quick, is Gibsonville right next to Mortonsville? I just need to know. Oh, don't no Johnny sell that, Sorrow. You asshole. Don't no sell Johnny that, you Sorrow. Asshole. Oh, yeah. tens of people are laughing right now.
There's probably a do not enter sign when they see your ass, Johnny.
Oh, come on. That's... I'm surrounded by, I don't know.
Well, hey, and I say Trevor Lee has been having the best world title defenses on the planet. Wow. So I will defend this promotion until I die. I love it. And everyone, man, thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.
I wasn't knocking the promotion.
I know you're knocking it in a small fucking...
No, I was... No, Gibson, Morton... The Rock and Roll Express. It's the Rock and Roll Express at the fucking fucking. This stays in, so fucking people can hear this. I insist. I was a Rock and Roll Express.
Yeah, I didn't pick up on it at all.
At the Mid Atlantic get together. Ah, come on.
My bad.
Yeah. Oh, man. I didn't get it either.
Really?
I'm in there. No.
I was so proud of that.
No, it was great. I'm embarrassed that I didn't get that show.
Yeah, same here.
My heartaches and troubles are just up and gone. The moment that you come in view, and with your hand in mine, I could dance on, and I could waltz across Texas with you. Waltz across Texas with you in my arms. Waltz across Texas with you. Like a storybook ending, I'm lost in your charms, and I could waltz across Texas with you.